Action Park Media. First cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest.
All right, welcome to Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Allen.
I'm Kevin Connolly, and this is normally the part where we would say Kevin Dillon. Kevin Dillon's returning to Los Angeles tomorrow, so Kevin Dillon will be on the next podcast.
Yeah,
but sitting in for Kevin Dillon, it's not really sitting in. Mike Young is here to provide color.
All right, so let me give you a quick background on Mike Young, but we're going to talk First Cut is the Deepest.
Season 4, Episode 2, First Cut is the Deepest, which we all can relate to.
But Mike Young, one of our oldest friends in L.A., I met him on a basketball court 30 years ago. He's been an inspiration in terms of the show in different moments. He was around in the writer's room a lot. He declined to read for E! When we could not find Kevin Connolly.
He was unavailable, right?
Said he was unavailable. He had just gotten a deal at what? The Montreal Comedy Festival?
Just got a deal.
A holding deal?
It was a holding deal with ABC. I wasn't allowed to audition for anything else.
You could have auditioned for it, bro.
Just to give a little context of how crazy this town is and how it all gets together. Jeff Jacobs was my agent at the time.
He's kind of loosely based on Ari, right?
Well, Jeremy Piven, in my outline, it said Jeremy Piven playing Jeff Jacobs.
Jeff Jacobs type.
No, not even a Jeff Jacobs.
Before Ari became Ari, right?
Yeah, well, it was not playing a Jeff Jacobs type. It was literally like playing Jeff Jacobs. And then in the pitch meeting for Entourage, which we're going to get into something else today, because today is just a crazy day, but I met Ari Emanuel for the first time. And in that meeting, I said, okay, this guy is the greatest.
This is new Jeff Jacobs.
Yeah. So it's now Jeremy Piven playing Jeff. But Jeff was representing Mike Young, who I think.
Was he representing you, Mike?
He was my agent.
Unless I'm crazy, I got you, Yuri.
100.
Yeah.
Well, that's another podcast.
No?
Let's pick that up on the Mike Young.
No, you didn't. Dave Becky did.
Okay.
Mike Young, stand-up comedian, open for Saget. We've been friends
Sebastian, he just opened.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
Going Mike's, back out Mike's with Sebastian.
All right. But anyway, either way, it doesn't matter whether
Mike, we'll get to your accolades.
Doesn't matter whether I got him.
Doug was talking about me.
All right, go
ahead. It doesn't matter whether I got him the agent or not. I'm sure I had something to do with it. I'm sure Jeff Jacobs called me up and said, what do you think of this guy? But anyway, I said, Mike, listen, we can't find this character. I wrote him, and it's funny because in the first cut is the deepest. I just laughed my ass off when Reese lifts you up like a small child.
Well,
I
mean, by the way, there was a few shots at me about in this
but
episode.
It's funny, man. And he could not, and honestly, it was written in as the character, and Mike Young could not have played that character if you were Orson Welles, because your size was part of the character. And that's
you're
not,
saying the only reason I got that role is because I am a smaller stature?
I am definitely not saying that, because you were the perfect guy, both acting and
you're
such.
Saying it's not, well, obviously, yeah, Reese isn't going to pick up Mike. I mean, things evolve.
Yeah, things
perfect
happen.
Perfect casting.
But what happened?
Well, you weren't going to get the role.
What happened was under a development deal. Tobey Maguire was my executive producer. Jeff Jacobs rep Toby.
We'll pick up that name he dropped at the next commercial break.
Please pick it up. But exactly what happened was, and I'll never forget this. I remember exactly what happened. Doug is in the room with Larry Charles and one other guy.
No, here, dude.
I'm just telling you my story.
Okay, yeah, no.
Please.
Let him. This is great. Go ahead.
No, this
Please
is
do.
My version.
Okay.
Doug's in the room, Larry Charles is in the room, and one other guy's in the room, right? I read for the part casually because I don't even know what this is. I don't know what it's going to be.
I don't know.
Doug,
by the way, also, Doug is texting mid-great story.
Mid-great story.
I hear everything. Mid-great story. I have to be live on Sean King's podcast in like 10 minutes.
The producer?
No, the quarterback for Tulane.
And how long?
Don't
how
worry
long,
about by Sean way, King. Admit,
this is a very important podcast that we're doing here, and this is a great story that Mike is walking
I am
into.
Focused on this story. Mike
this
Young.
This is a true moment.
It's okay. not. But,
hold on, okay. wait a second.
This is what I remember. I read the part, right?
I read for E.
I read for E. I put down the sign.
You read for E or Vince? No, it was Vince, I thought.
Hold on. No. I read for Vince.
You read for Vince.
I read for Vince because Doug was always saying to me, you got to introduce me to your boy, Kevin Connolly.
Right.
You got to introduce me to Connolly. I need a pit bull terrier.
I read for Vince.
I'm in the room. It's a super casual room.
And Larry Charles
walks to the door, and before he leaves, he turns to Doug and he goes,
I'm good with Mike, yeah.
I'm good with Mike.
Okay.
All right.
Let me talk.
I need to talk.
I'm going to hand it off to you, but before I hand it off to you, Mike, I want to say
I've never brought this up ever.
Before we hand this off to you, I want to say that I did everything I could to save you from this moment.
Can I say something though?
Doug Allen, take it away.
But I
can
say
I add
something?
One more thing before?
Sure. No. You don't throw an asterisk on this story.
Kev, please give me a parenthesis.
Let him give his story.
I met Adrian in Lev's office. I thought he was the kid from the movie My Bodyguard.
By the way, he would have been 20 years older than the,
but okay. I couldn't put it together, but I'd never seen hair like that.
Okay.
I was like, this guy's got the perfect hair for the bodyguard.
Great head of hair. All
right. Anyway, go ahead. That was what I remember from that moment.
Here's what I'm saying.
Is my memory 20? Maybe.
Okay, it's interesting that you say that, because your memory's fucked.
No.
Trust me. 2022.
It's not going to end well for you, bro.
2022 is a different world, though. You're lucky, because if this was 2012, we would...
Have the footage.
No, we would humiliate you, we would embarrass you, and we would horrify you. But now, in 2022, because of mental illness, because of people's recollections...
Jesus, Doug's...
No, mental illness!
Let me finish. Let me finish.
What are you talking about?
Let me finish. So because of all these things, we now understand that sometimes people remember things. They're not...
Like, he's not lying.
He's not lying. He remembers
you
it this
You believe
way.
This to be the case.
I always say this. You're not lying. You're just mistaken.
Yeah, right. You're mistaken.
Well, you are mistaken.
Let me tell you why you're 100 million percent mistaken.
Please remind
Larry
me.
Larry Charles does not come on and get involved with Entourage
until after the pilot
is picked up, okay? I've never met Larry Charles in my life till after we picked up the pilot. Then it was
when
sent to Larry.
When the pilot picked up. Vince, Eternal Drama, and Ari were all spoken for.
They were already
so that's
shot.
Impossible.
The show is done.
Am I mixing stories?
Yes.
Because Larry Charles looked at you and goes, I'm good with Mike.
As
was
Vince?
Was that about something else?
No, you dreamt this.
No, that was about what you were going to order for lunch.
Yeah. I remember being so impressed with that Larry Charles was
Dave,
in the
room. Dave's having a field day back there, by the way.
This is my memory.
Yeah. Do you understand? So Larry Charles.
I believe that you believe that.
We shoot this show.
I know I didn't forget about Miss Alabama come to the door frame.
We shoot this show in 2003, and Larry Charles, God bless him, who I love and credit him with so much, Larry Charles had nothing to do with the pilot. I wrote the pilot. We produced the pilot. Larry Charles and Rob Weiss both were not involved in the pilot. They both came on after the pilot.
So, could he have visited?
I mean, if he did, I didn't meet him.
Here's the other thing, too.
Memory.
Mike, I know that you obviously wouldn't say that knowing, having the information that Doug and I have. So
absolutely
listen,
not.
One of the things that I say about this Victory of the Podcast, the interesting thing about what we do here at Victory of the Podcast, and I find this with a lot of these shows, is if you go back and you look at DVD commentary or whatever, you're doing commentary on episodes a few months after you shot them. We're looking back at this 16, 17, 18 years later. And again, to Doug's point, nobody's lying. People just have weird memories of it. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I could be mixing stories.
No, you might be. You definitely are mixing stories because Larry Charles didn't even know what was going on. They brought Larry Charles in to be like a Godfather, Yoda type, Zen type.
But I think Kevin is right. I think at one of our lunch meetings, because Mike used to sit in the writer's room, he'd bring his lunch. And I think at some point you might have said, I'll have the chicken parm. And Larry said, I'm good with that.
I'm good with it. If Mike likes the chicken parm, good. Then I'm good. Yo, it's good by me.
Yo, were we not together in your Honda Accord or something at a gas station when you got the word that it was getting picked up?
That is
and
possible.
And we celebrated.
That's
and like,
possible.
But
what does that have to do with anything?
My memory.
Once it's picked up, Vince
memory.
Was already cast as Adrian Grenier. I mean,
Mike, you're a great comedian, great softball player.
Bad memory.
But also,
no,
something
happened in a room with
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, like the
I don't want to get into what might have happened with you and Larry Charles in a room. Anyway, with Larry Charles,
you
is
wanted
a legend
you wanted
and an amazing guy. But also, you have to remember, and you can listen to it on the Kev Cove podcast, Mike Young has one of the most amazing Hollywood stories ever, where he got, and Mike Young's a tough motherfucker, but Mike Young got beat up by some gangsters, pseudo-gangsters.
Yeah.
I used it on the show because Mike was apologizing to this guy. And you can listen to the Kev Cook podcast to get the whole thing. But Mike was apologizing to this guy. He didn't know that the guy was actually planning on putting a gun in his mouth and beating him up. Mike brought a Burke Williams gift certificate to apologize. And I had drama do that
right in
the episode where they hung him off the balcony. But anyway, that story is legitimately...
It's a great story, and there's so much to get into. But
by the
one
way, Doug
more...
was my first phone call. Just
at the hospital.
If you want to know.
Yeah.
He's one of still the more... my emergency contact.
One of the more memorable parts of that story, well, I shouldn't even say that. There's so many. It's such a crazy story. But you, after getting to a fight with this guy, offering to bringing him a Burke Williams gift certificate and buying him an Arizona Wildcat hoodie is crazy. But yeah, to really get the end. And by the way, we can even do this on another victory episode, episode.
They did it on the Kepco. But what Mike Young was probably, I mean, you were probably my best friend in the town at that point.
We had a great run together.
And Mike, we met on a basketball court. Mike can talk about my athletic skills for a slow guy.
Sure, super soft hands, maybe slow feet, but a very smart athlete.
But this brings us to, because Mike is a phenomenal hockey player for a 54-year-old and great athlete.
Seven.
But Connelly, you had
Mike lies about his age.
Does he lie about his age?
I'm all the ages.
Yeah, Mike will just skew 7 years younger no matter what.
What?
So he's 54, but he's going
not by, to my good friends.
Am I not allowed to say that? You're 54, right?
Say whatever you
he's
want.
He's 54, but he'll go by 46, 47.
We'll go 47.
But anyway, athletic prowess. We've talked a lot about Connelly, who I've always said, I've never made fun of Connelly as an athlete. He's a solid athlete. But he's playing in this adult hockey league where he's been somewhat humiliated, almost cut. But now you come in today and tell me you had 2 goals and an assist.
Listen,
last night.
I don't want to put any unnecessary pressure on myself. I had a decent showing at the home opener. I don't want to make a big deal about it. Yeah, I did have a couple goals.
What do you mean assist. You don't want to make a big deal about
well,
it?
Because I
walked
I don't
in, you said, ask me about the hockey
guys,
game.
A lot of these guys listen to the podcast, and I don't need extra pressure. I prefer
did you
to fly,
fly in and go right to your game?
No, the game's tomorrow. This is last week.
Oh, last
this
week.
This is last week. But Scotty, you know, by the way, BP Scotty scores four goals. Scotty's like McDavid out there.
Is Scotty
I've
in
been
there?
Been on a team with
Kevin.
I mean, Kevin.
Scotty's too busy to be here, but I don't know. These guys also, I want to explain.
BB Scotty's good. BB Scotty's maybe the best guy in the league or one of, for
but
sure.
But I also want to remind, we're going to get into this episode in after the break,
sorry.
But I want to say, I you know, one of the things about Kevin Connelly, which maybe you don't know this,
oh,
he's kind of, you're like a woman a little bit. Like if
really?
Connelly,
nice.
Oh, wait, I can't even say that in 2022.
No, you can say
I don't mean you're
shit.
Like a woman. You're like a sensitive man or you can't say that either.
I have feelings.
You're a sensitive
I'm not a cold-hearted
person.
Human,
but cold-hearted animal like
but,
yourself.
But the point is if Kevin Connelly calls you, or if Kevin Connelly texts you, if you don't respond
are
within
you fucking,
minutes,
you're the absolute
you
worst.
Will get a call back, you will get a message, you will get a good talk, whatever it is.
Mike Young, since all the cards are on the table here, am I right? Mike,
no,
who's
no, no,
worse?
No, Kev, I have to say sometimes you are tough to get a hold of. You don't always
oh, yeah.
respond.
Right.
But if you hit me one or two times in a row, then
right.
the third one is like a mean
yep,
statement.
Exactly.
And I'm a little scared of you, Kev.
And Mike, wow. I always respond,
I'm not saying
correct?
This.
Always respond.
You always respond.
Thanks.
Doug, you are
when
the
you
king
can.
Of the silent treatment.
No. Well, if I'm mad, that's different. If
you're
I'm
always
if
mad.
I'm making
you're
a
mad
purpose.
About something. Whatever.
But my point was Connelly and Scotty, beefy fucking Scotty, who can't take the time to respond to my motherfucking messages.
I was
okay?
on fucking set, bro. I was
so
on a set. I'm an
someone
actor.
Someone sent the thing.
Thespian.
They don't like that I don't call him Beefy Scotty anymore. They like the nickname. They
that's
want
it.
The nickname,
yeah.
and that's it.
That's it. Call him Beefy Scotty.
But
Beefy Scotty scored four
here.
Goals. He's fucking, there's other things happening in the Action Park office.
Wait, did Scotty score 4 goals last night?
Scotty's the best player in the league. Bro.
I just asked you a question. Did he score 4 goals last night?
Scotty also plays in the league division above
I
us.
I can't get an answer.
He
out
scored
of this guy.
4 goals in the division above us.
Okay, but
yes.
I guess what I was saying is your 2 goals, it sounds like your 2 goals weren't that much. How many goals just scored 30 in this
no,
game?
No, we won 7-1 right. or 7-2. Right.
Kevin's a solid rollerblade hockey. He was on my team. We won a championship in LA. He can play roller hockey.
Yeah. Does he get in
for
fights?
Sure. He's scrappy. He does not back
so
down.
So tell everyone in the league, watch
that's
out.
That's what I'm saying. You're going to get me in trouble. I don't want any problem with these guys.
All
be
right.
nice.
All right. I got other things
great
to
teams.
Talk about.
Great
and
teams.
Now that we're weirdly, first of all, the first cut is the deepest.
It's ironic. It's
yeah.
ironic. Let's take a break real quick, and we're going to come back.
A
and
break?
Yeah, but it's a commercial break, Mike.
Oh, commercial,
it's a commercial
break.
Break. We sell ads
okay,
to our
break.
People. But we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the first cut is the deepest, and it's ironic because it's the, you know, the lines get a little bit blurry. So coming back from the break, we're going to talk season 4, episode 2, first cut is the deepest.
All right, welcome back. Victor the Pot. A, I had a huge meeting today. B, I have to do another podcast I do with Sean King, who was the 2-lane quarterback when we were 12-0, almost won the national championship with Mac Brown. I do a little gambling segment on his show. Actually, it's not a podcast. It's a show with cameras and things. It's a
right.
real show. And you're going to say hello to Sean, who's a great guy. But
am I committed to that?
You just have to say hello.
But you didn't tell him, like, if something happened, right?
No, be like, I didn't tell him. I don't even know if he knows who you are. To be honest. I told him Mike Young might come in, too. I said, the guy who opened for Sebastian, he goes, Mike Young, I love that guy. Didn't he almost play Vince? And we're like, no, that never happened.
Does he know me, Sean King? I want to meet him.
He doesn't know yet. So anyway,
any fan.
The first cut is the deepest. There was so many things that I want to get into that was so personal to me, which after the next break we'll get into. But just watching that episode, there are a couple of things. I have video of me watching the Ramble On screening at the house where I'm walking around.
You're
like
doing
Walsh.
That stuff
is
like
doing
Walsh.
It, you know, like right. In this episode. But so what we just had, and Mike Young was really around for the beginning of Entourage, reading all the scripts and, you know, hearing the whole process and all of that stuff.
It was awesome.
But today, you know, I won't say who it was, but big production company that has 30 shows on the air. And, you know, they saw the show probably 10 weeks ago and watched.
They saw it early on.
Yeah. And they said from the get-go, we want the show. We want to make the show. And we just want to hear you lay out what the first season is, which is, you know, like puts the immediate anxiety into me. But anyway, I've spent the last 10 weeks making sure I was really ready.
This is a perfect example, Doug. So we know that Doug's got this meeting at 3:00. I know he's got the meeting at 3:00. I get off a plane. I'm trying to get him on the phone from 2:30. Finally, he's ignoring all my text messages. My call's going straight to voicemail. And then at 2:48, he's like, what do you want me to do? My meeting is in 12 minutes. I'm like, okay. Then afterwards, had it go. It's like dragging everything out of you. It's so hard. Story, why is it so hard?
It's amazing, by the way.
It's a nerve-wracking thing.
Yeah, but just say, like,
season?
Yo.
Mike, I got to say.
Just say it went well. I'll call you when it's over.
This made me scared for Zulai just now. I mean, honestly, I'm one of the, and everyone knows this who knows me from life on, I'm one of the most available human beings on the planet. I have a 30-minute speech that I had to give today to people who hopefully
I wasn't trying to mess up your speech.
I know I don't think you were messing up. I was literally working. I was literally nonstop practicing this over and over and over.
I'm a coach, bro. I'm like a guy that you want to hear from.
Honestly, when I'm on the set, I'm available. I'm like, I'm in the middle of scenes. I'm like, yo, what's up, Mike Young? You need me? You good? What's up? You in the hospital? Someone beat you up? I'm right here for you. So
Did you go with notes or no notes?
I had a binder. I had my Ramble On binder with legitimately, and you know, just so people can get a little taste of what the difference is in the business. 15 years ago, when you do Entourage, you spend 2 years working on a pilot. When you finally get the pilot picked up, they go, okay, go. And then you figure out what the season is. It's a different world.
This guy's doing 14 podcasts.
It's a different world right now. But wait, it's not 5:30 yet, so I'm still doing this podcast. But
hey, what's up, buddy? What's going on?
But I need 4 minutes.
This is crazy.
But anyway, the difference in the world right now is you have to know what the whole season is, and sometimes even more than that. So we have an amazing pilot, which they already loved, but still they're saying, okay, what's the show?
But that's not like personal to you. That's sort of standard. That's kind of how it goes.
I didn't say it was personal to me.
But you take it personally.
No, I didn't take it personally at all. I just didn't have time to take your phone calls today. I just had to work.
What am I saying? I'm a guy, you know, listen, I'm a quasi-producer on the show. Action Park Media was the physical production company. We could, I think I'm due to have a little pep talk 5 minutes before a big
42 films later.
All I wanted to do was tell you to stay positive and have a good time.
I sent Connolly all the information. I sent him the scripts when they're ready. I sent him the outlines. Last week, I sent him a script. I sent the same thing to Charlie, Dave Perkel, our DP, Ted Foxman, our producer. Everybody reads it, calls me, tells me their thoughts.
I was on a set.
I don't have a printer. I don't have a printer.
I was on. You know what, bro? I'll say it. I was on set. I was on set. We didn't have a lot of the Wi-Fi wasn't good, and I didn't even get. I'm like reading it in fractions. I'm like reading little pieces. And no, I did not have a printer in my triple banger trailer.
Anyway, hopefully your movie went well, but I can say the pitch today could not have gone better. You know when a pitch is good and
you laid it out.
They want to make the show. So I don't know what that means yet. I don't know if they're ready to finance it or produce it or what, but anyway, they're putting together.
Congrats on a great meeting.
Well, I'm gonna need a little more
details. I'm gonna do a little quick football.
You do your football podcast. Hopefully nobody listens to your picks. You're not making any picks for these guys.
I'm making picks. Yeah.
Oh God, Sean.
I feel like that's my shirt.
Sean
is that
King.
My shirt?
Sean King, do not listen to anybody listening to Sean's show. Doug might be the worst picker in the world. And his emotion will make you believe that pick is going to come through.
Seattle covering over Denver was Justin, huge.
No, they didn't. You're 0-7.
We will be back. Victory of the podcast. First cut is the deepest.
All right, we're rolling. We're back. Doug had to take a second break to do a podcast in the middle of our podcast.
That's a TV show. That's a show.
TV show, podcast, whatever it was. You cut us off that in the middle of our flow.
Tulane legend Sean King. And that was fun, though. Kevin was joined nice. Us. Yeah, we made some picks, and I don't know. We're not talking football, but
you
let's
always
get
need
into
a little backup, Doug.
The first cut is the deepest.
First cut is the deepest.
We all know that.
Mike, you watched it with us, and you know,
I got to tell you, Doug, there's a few storylines happening here, and one that, for obvious reasons, when we were shooting it, it meant nothing to me, and not that I didn't care about it, but this is the one where Ari and Mrs. Ari are having a problem getting their son Lucas into school, and
Jonah,
he is played by Lucas Allen.
Yeah,
is it really that hard to get kids into? I hear stories.
Yeah.
Is it that political? And is that just California, or is that kind of the deal?
It's everywhere.
Well, or is it more in like affluent communities?
Well, obviously it's in affluent communities because of private school, but the truth is it's gotten worse because the public school system keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So,
right. So you want to send your kids to private school, but there's like a political game to that. Really like that? Well, did you guys exaggerate it at all?
I didn't exaggerate at all. There's a worse than a political game. It's a fortune of money. My kids would be upset with me. I'm not sure if it's worth it or not, which is what's, you know.
All three of us went public school.
Yeah. Right. But
we went to the school closest to our house.
It's a different, yeah, it's good a different bit. World.
It's true.
It's a different world. And our parents, my parents, didn't have time to think about, or the money to go, let me go get you into the school. But, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. This watching this episode, first of all, I forgot almost about it.
And are those numbers real?
What were the numbers?
How
there?
Much it could it cost? I mean, is it gonna cost
$200,000 already spent?
Is it gonna cost
me? It's like $50,000 a year to send a kid to grade school in Los Angeles.
Insane.
If you want to go to and the story came from because my brother has four kids or three of them went to Brentwood School. I had the dean.
Brentwood is a private school.
Private school.
Right.
The dean of that school on the show. Watching episodes. I had board members come.
And this is all to finagle and
schmooze.
This is all
to finagle to get Lucas Allen when he was about 6 years old into the school for the right to pay a fortune of money.
Now, you got to get the show picked up, Doug.
No shit. This gave me such anxiety with a new kid on the way because, and again, I don't want to tell anyone like we're elitists who want to go to private school. I don't want to go to private school, but the fact of the matter is even where my house is, there's not a good public school. So what I did the last time is I actually moved to send my kids to the public school. And Lucas, who hopefully won't be mad at me, but he had some learning differences.
By the way, he's thriving.
He's doing unbelievable.
I can't believe that video. I had to watch that video three times. Doug sent me a picture of video of Lucas at a frat party in college. I watched it 18 times because I couldn't believe it. Lucas looks like Tom Cruise in Risky Business.
You also never responded.
He's a handsome kid.
I did respond.
You did?
I did respond. You text so many people. I did respond. I did.
By the way, what's the video?
So is the video,
he's raging in this video.
All right,
bro.
Let's
can say whatever you want about Lucas in elementary school because he's really caught up with himself because he's murdering
but
it.
Let's
show reruns of him on Entourage.
But I want to set the stage for this and we'll get back to the private school thing. Lucas Allen was such a goody-goody.
I know.
So him sending that video in a bathrobe, by the way, at the frat party.
I mean, I'm guessing it was some kind of a bathrobe party, right? Like what do you call it?
Toga.
Toga party.
It was, I actually think it was a Playboy
or
party.
like a Midsummer Night Dream.
Also, good for him.
He's going to be mad at me, but he might. Well, I guess I can't say that.
Whatever. The point is that.
No, but I want to say most parents who, and college is a fortune, by the way.
Right.
So
that might be a waste of money.
$70,000 a year, maybe more with everything else. And Lucas Allen goes to the same school that Mike Young went to. The
U of A Wildcat.
You should have
fun.
Lucas get Pesci a Wildcat sweater.
See if he's got another hoodie.
Red
out
hoodie.
There. But by the way, I'll go visit Lucas.
But can I say something?
I'll have fun.
Most parents, I think, like, you get the test back and it's an A or they get some scholarship and you get emotional. Lucas was such a goody-goody. Him sending me that video
made you happy.
Oh, it brought
that
tears
he's having
to my
fun.
Eye. That
he's enjoying himself.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. And
I didn't know who it was. I had to watch it four times. Lucas is like up on a table like murdering it.
How
good for
how
him?
How good looking is this
good,
kid? By the way,
good looking kid, and he's having a great time.
All of Sarah's
and
friends
we also,
talk about how handsome.
We also have to bring Lucas.
Does he have
in.
Your teeth?
Yo, for this this guy that's like talking smack about the trivia contest and the Movember thing on TikTok, we'll bring him in and we'll put him up against Lucas and we'll see how that goes for him in trivia. Lucas
Wait, what are we talking about?
A guy we had that we, you know, when we were doing the Entourage trivia thing, there's a guy, disgruntled guy out there that said I would give him a shot at the trivia title and he would have to go up against Lucas Ellen. But we'll talk about that another time.
I don't totally follow, but all right.
What don't you follow? You sent me the video of the guy complaining that I didn't let him into the victory trivia game.
Oh, right. He said if he donated, you would let him in.
Let him do, but we never had the tournament. So I wasn't like, you know, he donated the money, but it wasn't my, she donated the money to a charity, not my charity. I didn't keep it. He donated it to the charity. The trivia thing kind of fell through, but if he really wants it, Lucas Ellen will smack
him
around.
Why are you so mad at him?
Not mad at him at all. Well, he accused me of basically, I don't know, I didn't like the TikTok video. Whatever.
Right. We should show the video.
Everybody
understands. So, but anyway, back to the private school situation. It's 100% real. First of all, they test your kid when they're 6 years old, and then they're judging them. But what happened with me is I brought all these people from Brentwood to the set. By the way, I shouldn't even talk about this because I may need another kid in this school, and now I'm like in trouble again. But they all came to the set, and I got a fucking form letter. Basically, nobody called me, nobody nothing. I just got a form letter that he was not accepted. And honestly, you know.
So you ran through all the hoops and bells and whistles, right. and then he didn't get into the school that you wanted him to.
I know that pissed you off, Doug.
I wrote episodes of television about it. I should have, instead of Briar County Day, I should have named it Brentwood. And if my brother's kids go there.
Why wouldn't they? Because they're
fucking assholes. Because they're elitist assholes. I don't want to say
you're elitist, but like you're, you know. You've done well for yourself. You're in the community.
By the way, just because you make money does not make you elitist. Elitist is when you're an asshole to people who have less than you or other things. I'm not elitist.
I gotta be honest. I don't really have my finger on the pulse of how that works.
I wouldn't want to be there when Doug got the letter.
Why wouldn't they want to let Doug's kid in? Why wouldn't they want to let Lucas into the school?
Well, first of all,
and by the way, he's the nicest kid in the world.
He might have hit someone with a ruler. I don't know what happened, but you know.
That's weird. I'm not looking forward to that because I can't imagine.
He was too smooth.
I can't imagine that.
He was already coming off seven episodes.
By the way,
Connelly on the sidelines
of the games, like they said to Ari. Yeah, that's going to go great.
The way you curse on the sidelines.
Connelly at a private school football game.
by the way, I wrote the episode in a way that worked for Ari's character, which is, you know, for people who care about writing. The true story is it had nothing to do with me. They rejected my son for whatever stupid test that he took when he was 6 years old.
The nicest kid in the world.
Talented, funny.
And again, we've been blowing Lucas's horn, but Lucas is like in public service since he's like 12 years old.
Yeah.
The fire department. And all these things. He's like what you want your kid to be.
Yeah. I'd like to see those Brentwood kids doing that, but they ain't doing that. But anyway,
drugs.
It's a terrible situation. And it's one of the reasons one of the reasons I want to move out of here is because I want to be near good public schools. Because I do believe in public school. I had someone, Eddie Mata, you know him, right? He's talked to us a bunch of times. He was at my high school for whatever reason playing tennis the other day. And I am in the high school hall of fame at JFK, class of 86, Belmont. But I love my high school and I loved my childhood and I loved going to high school there. My best friends in the world are still from that high school. So, you know, part of me regrets how my kids grew up here because it's such
a... You and Dylan have talked a little bit about that because Dylan is from Malibu and Beverly Hills and they think that there's a...
Did Dylan grow up private school? No way.
No, Dylan didn't, but Dylan's daughters are, you know, Malibu and...
Of course.
Doug and Dylan feel like there's... A stigma. And I was like, well, you know, Kennedy's from West Hollywood. Dylan's like, just drop the West, call it Hollywood, and it'll sound, you know.
But I don't even like saying tougher. That. I used to tell my kids, they used to say, where are you from? Beverly Hills. I'd be like, no, just say New York. And they're like, we're not from New York. And the weird thing is I still feel like I'm just a New Yorker and my whole family is New Yorkers, but they're not.
It's interesting. 100%. It's interesting, though. Doug and Dylan both were like, not uncomfortable is not the word, because you guys worked hard and you earned your kids the right to go to certain schools. But they both were like, where are you from? Malibu. Like, I don't know. I don't see the problem, but I understand.
I'm completely uncomfortable with it. I hate the idea of private school, but I just, you know, I wanted to work and give my kids the best.
You don't want to send your new daughter to Fairfax High?
No. I feel like the three of us would have been friends in high school. We would have had a good run in high school.
I might have spent
a great
little time with you guys. Probably not Friday or Saturday night, but maybe during the week.
Oh, really?
If you guys
by the way,
you wouldn't even be in.
Do you find him edgy today or no?
He is edgy.
What's
he's
wrong
edgy.
With him?
It's a long day. I was on a flight.
Oh, you had a long day. Instead of pitch trying to save your life, and you had a long day.
You know, Kev's on a little. I'm scared to look at a text.
By the way, Kev, if you find this stuff, maybe Mike will now come in and read for the Kevin Connolly role on Ramble On.
Please.
All right. right. No, so the other thing, which I think
0-2 on roles I was given.
Which I think is interesting. Roles you were given by people that weren't there yet. the other part of the story is, which I think is hilarious, is Drama having Vince's return home party. So Drama has moved into, we're doing Medellin, and Dylan, we lost our house. We have no money. So Dylan has this condo that we shot in. Was it the Franklin Towers? Something like that.
I think that's so. Was that the one that was Ron Jeremy's place?
Ron Jeremy lived there.
So Ron Jeremy, the porn star, lived there. And used to just
come and sit behind the monitor, which was always made me and everybody else wildly uncomfortable because he would usually be sleeping in the third row of Video Village. Isn't that strange?
That
he lived in
weird.
The building. So he would just come sit there and nobody ever wanted to say anything to him.
No.
Not hello or anything. I just told him, don't let him near craft service. Don't let him near craft service. But Drama's having a homecoming party, I guess you'd say, for Vince. Yeah. And Vince is like, why don't we just have it at the hotel? Drama's like, no, you're my brother. I want to host you in my new home. And then, of course, Drama and Drama fashion has all kinds of rules. How are you guys about that sort of stuff? Mike, you don't like anybody at your house, right?
No.
You never have.
Wow, you are on edge. That's not... But that's not true. I don't mind visitors at all. I'm not a clean freak at all.
You're not a gathering guy.
I was the best gathering guy at U of A. I threw the greatest parties at our house, loved a house full of people, had no problem cleaning up afterwards. But no, I'm not a clean freak, Kev.
I didn't say you were a clean freak.
No, but I'm not, you don't have to take your shoes off when you come to my place.
Well, I would hope not. I mean, that's a very, very, very rare.
I got pictures of you doing location scout on my couch. You know what I mean? Like leaned over.
I'll give you a couple of things on that story. That story is definitely one from me and two from one of my favorite shows, The Odd Couple. Felix Unger was
that
guy.
Make you take your shoes off?
But Felix Unger, my mother made you take your shoes off when you walked to her house. In Merrick, Long Island, my 2,200 square foot house, my mother had a, you know, people thought we were rich in Merrick because my mother put a refrigerator in the garage. We were the first house where people ever saw a second fridge. My mother put it there because she didn't want boys coming into the house.
Fridge.
Like she didn't want sweaty men coming into the house.
Whatever, there's water, Gatorade, and light beer in the fridge.
That's it. Stay outside. Right. The garage is for you. But I am, you know me, at my parties, like I want the party in and out.
Yeah,
and
you don't have a problem with numbers.
No.
You're a timing guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So come one, come all, and then when the plug is pulled, everybody's going to get the
fuck out
of
the house. Yeah, be gone
by 10. Right.
Yeah. But I stole, you know what I stole. I mean,
from Trading Places.
Trading Places. Right. I mean, Dylan, I honestly told him to imitate Eddie Murphy when Eddie Murphy gets the big house or apartment, whatever it is, and he has a party.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, Dylan was doing that. But the story, we had all those other elements to it, which really, it was really funny. A padlock in the bathroom and, you know, and pulling down the IKEA chandelier. And
listen, I was that way when I first bought my house and I had nothing. Like when I moved into my house, I didn't have like plates or knives or forks. So my house was basically empty and I would have like rager next level parties.
At this house now?
At this house that I live in now. And then as nice stuff starts to come that you've worked for and it's not cheap, you do get a little bit like, yeah, bro. Yeah. Are you crazy? You put the fucking beer down on the put a fucking coaster. What are you? Were you raised in a fucking in somebody's backyard? You put a coaster down and you don't stay away from the credenza. You don't put a beer down on the credenza. Yeah. Stay away from the credenza.
You can't enjoy a party.
Well, when you start to get nice things, it's not that you can't enjoy it, but you hope that people appreciate your stuff. And when I first moved into the house, I didn't have anything. It was like all bets were off.
But it's also
I started to get nice couches.
But that's kind of the funny thing of Hollywood, like. Normally, once you get to the point of having nice things, your parties are more sophisticated and stuff. But
you would
still,
hope.
But in LA,
well, have
still,
fun. Have fun.
But still, in LA, we have a lot of animal friends. And like they come over and there's food on the floor and people dug in a fucking pizza into the couch. It's like.
I feel like I've been at the highest end parties in Hollywood and it's been debauchery.
Yeah.
There's been no coasters
well,
anywhere.
Then there's people that are so rich they could just get a new credenza, where I would prefer I just keep my new credenza that I got, right? But the feet, the shoes off. And by the way, Sebastian does a great bit about taking your shoes off. And a good friend of ours who shall remain nameless. We have a friend that was like pretty heavy into it.
Yeah.
The shoes off.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm.
And like he went as far as to have like the covers, right? So if you didn't want to take your shoes
the
off.
The construction covers?
Or like the medical covers where you could put
on
like
the
weird
new house,
baggies on your feet.
I haven't told Sarah yet in the new house. I'm
You're
going
shoes? Yeah. No, dude, don't
honestly,
do that, bro. Don't
when
do that,
you really
dude.
Think about it, first of all, I have two dogs. And when I think about the fact that my dogs don't have shoes and they walk around the street and then come into my house, get on my bed, it's really disgusting.
It's just one of those things you want to be in denial about. Don't make me, I'm not taking my shoes.
No. Shoes are coming off. I mean,
are you
I got.
Serious,
yeah,
bro?
Oh, yeah.
What about hardwood floor?
I got a brand new hardwood floor.
What about the the wrappies? Will you do the wrappies?
No, but why would shoes
if
come off?
If someone wanted that, wouldn't you rather your shoes off than
no? I don't want my shoes.
You're talking like the carpenter blue thing.
No, like the things, like the little, like hair literally, nets, but for feet.
Yeah, like that's what construction workers.
Yeah, you
use.
Put. I would
you
rather,
would rather
put,
that. Than
I would rather
be in
that
socks.
Than walk around with socks with a bunch of other people that I don't know. Yeah. It's a strange thing.
I've had to check a couple construction guys at my mom's house, make sure they had their shoes on.
That's way different.
I can get boots.
Mike, you telling me if I were having like a little, hey, come over, it's Christmas Eve. Oh, Mike, hey, take your shoes. And everybody had their
shoes. No booties.
I think it'd be a little weird.
No
booties.
You know, I'm gotten into the point of my life where I'm just like, I don't want people walking in with their like dog piss on their shoes. I don't think that's
just
weird.
Life, bro.
I think we get a little less social as we get older. I think we
I'm so not social anymore. So yeah, I mean,
but you're not shy to have a party. That's the thing that Doug might seem anti-social.
Doug loves a good birthday party.
He loves a good birthday party. He just wants everybody.
Doug loves
Doug
a party
just wants
for
everybody gone at 9:05.
Yeah.
Nine of the biggest comedians will be roasting Doug at his own party.
Dude, if Doug has a, it's like, yo, the party starts at 6, you should probably get there at 6.
Mike Young was at that party, by the way, because...
Of course I was.
I mean, Kevin... I still have the memory of Kevin Connolly's laugh. Do you remember him?
While Jeff Ross...
Like Jeff
and
Ross and Saget were roasting me.
Ross is like my favorite in the world, and to hear him roast Doug and absolutely obliterate Doug was hilarious.
But Jeff's mind just works... As a roast. Yeah. Just funny. Everything he says is a
he's
roast.
He's just one
it's
big
but
roast.
But Connolly was up in the hills on a hillside, and when you listen back to the tape, you hear him laughing like De Niro in Cape Fear. It is, it's genuine. It's real.
Oh, that's I was great. Very real. I also just broke my leg and was probably on 82 Vicodin or something. I must have been because I was cackling.
You know what?
But remember, I was like really hurt.
Wow. You know what?
It was like a couple days after my surgery.
Because I was like, wow, he is loving every
he's
minute
not
of this.
Fit. I think
that was one of the best parties.
Maybe he's exaggerating that leg.
That was one of the best Hollywood parties of all time.
Quality food, quality people, quality night, Doug's birthday, got roasted.
It's a good party.
Damn.
It's the best
damn.
Of all time.
We
were so young.
By the way, I'm not a good roaster. I've never been a good roaster.
You're nice. You're too nice of a guy.
Not even nice. It's just not my style. But like, I remember Ross came up to me, he just goes out, like the first thing out of his mouth, when'd you quit comedy?
You know what else is great about Ross? Like, he knows, like he can pick up, like he knows Doug doesn't care. I'm a little roast sensitive. So when
are you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just sensitive, right? Like, it's not, you know, so when he came on, when he did Victory, you can hear him. Like, he's kind of, like, ripping into Doug, and he knows, like, where to lean off the gas on
sensitive.
People that
remember
don't
what I said?
Really,
sensitive.
Yeah.
Not sensitive,
I didn't know
bro.
Ross
was sensitive. I'm like, you can wear your shoes in my house if you want.
That's not
want.
About sensitivity. That's about germ phobia. I don't like germs, but Jeff Ross, do you remember what he says? Maya, who was probably... 10 maybe she gets up and Jeff goes in front of like there's 200 people there and there's Oscar winners there and there's Adrian Brody, Larry David's there and Jeff Ross goes, Maya, how many times has Piven hit on you this month? Oh my God. It's one of my favorite pictures of all time. You got Russell Wilson, Bob Saget, Adrian Brody, and my kids. Jeff Ross is doing it. And my kids, Lucas has got the biggest smile on his face ever.
Fun.
And Maya is horrified. She just hated
amazing.
Jeff Ross.
That's amazing.
Do you think, you know, it's funny if Dylan were here. I'm curious. I wonder if Dylan is like that.
Like
at,
what?
At a party at his house. Probably somewhere in the middle.
We've got the parties at his house.
You definitely don't have to take your shoes off at Dylan's house. But I don't know that Dylan is going to follow you around.
I don't think you want to touch Dylan's pinball machines.
Right,
I don't know about that.
You want to take it easy with Dylan's credenzas.
I mean.
I might be the guy that keeps like some coasters in my back pocket in case I see somebody.
I loved all the buildup of that scene. You know what I mean? Dylan just the chandelier gas sticks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Let's move the couch. Just getting everything. You know what I mean?
It's funny that Connolly said the back
covered.
Pocket though. Big
ooh,
eye
ooh,
spot
ooh,
out of Connolly.
Ooh, ooh. Yeah. And
tell
the
us.
Only thing that I saw, and it's crazy because Kevin Dillon is the absolute best at this, but is that a Costco that they're
Costco,
at getting supplies?
Yeah.
So Drama and Turtle are at Costco getting party supplies. Doug, do we want to talk about the baby wipes? We just don't have an answer for why they had a crate full of baby wipes.
I still don't know why, because he was locking them out of the bathroom.
Doug turns around and looks at me and goes, what's with the baby wipes? I'm like, I don't know, bro. You wrote the episode.
There was probably a moment where you thought about writing in someone took a dump at the house because he was against it and they were going to use baby wipes.
I don't know.
Or somebody had a baby.
Or you wanted to
someone
bring
a baby?
No, it was not baby. It was sanitation oriented.
Yeah.
So it wasn't baby wipes.
Because he talked about the chicken wings, you know.
Chicken wings. wings. Yeah,
but maybe. He wasn't going to give anybody chicken wings. So I have no idea. I don't know. It never paid off. Bad writing.
If you look and you turn around, or maybe we missed something. I mean, Mike was working on a side project. There was other, there was some riffraff happening in the office when we were covering the episode. But when you see Dylan, he walks away and he walks towards the baby wipes or somewhere at Costco. You can see his sides in his back pocket. And sides are like a mini version of your script. Now, my guess is one could argue that that was the list.
Yeah.
But I know mini sides when I see them.
You saw mini sides.
And I saw Dylan's mini sides in his back pocket.
Do you think he owes an apology for that? Or what?
I think that Dylan is one of those guys that's like weirdly would be mortified. Dylan's not trying to have you see his sides in his back pocket.
But I'll bet you most people thought it was the shopping list.
The shopping list. He got away with it, or that's why they didn't see.
But Turtle was carrying the shopping list. So what do you
know? Oh, he was?
Like a,
did Turtle? Was Turtle carrying?
Yeah, he was reading
it. They're Dylan's sides in his back pocket, sides. Bro. I know sides, like, and they're molded around his ass. You could just tell. Like, they get like kind of wet by the end when you're sitting on them all day, you know? So,
by the way, that scene holds up to this day because Costco is the greatest place.
It is amazing.
It's the best.
It is amazing.
The wings are great. The food, the hummus.
We really dialed it up with the chicks and this one. This little overkill with girls.
I will say it's never overkill.
I mean, if Costco, if there's girls like that at Costco, I would encourage all my single friends to get down to your local Costco.
Get yourself a wing.
And get some baby wipes.
You know what? I've said it before. One of the mandates of this show was be absolutely as realistic as possible while making every setting be as wish fulfillment like and aspirational possible. As possible.
And simple, like we got to move to LA. Even Costco has hot girls. Even there's hot girls.
It's crazy.
And you know, I said that to them in the Ramble On meeting today. I talked to them about some of the differences with what LA would look like in the show today, 2022, and what it looked like then. But the truth is we wanted it, and I get messages all the time about people who moved to Hollywood or got into the business because of the show. And
all the time, people. I mean, honestly, all the time.
Yeah, and we wanted it. We wanted people to feel like, I want to be there. Now, in 2022, being fair to men, I guess we would have maybe put more good-looking men in. But to be honest with you, it was. I hope women love the show. This was a men's wish fulfillment show, and I don't want to watch a lot of shirtless, good-looking dudes walking around. I just didn't want to watch it.
So, no,
not because it upsets me.
Well, by the way, even in the show when Turtle is handing out the flyers, he hands it out to the girls, and he walks by dudes like, "Sorry, bro, it's a little tight in there."
You know? By the way, we used to say that all the time. No dudes.
Yeah,
bring more dudes.
You can't bring dudes.
Everyone can try to change the culture all they want, but the reality is young men, first of all, again, if you're a gay man, great. You want good looking dudes and that's fine. But young heterosexual men want to be at a party with less competition and lots of good looking women. That's just reality. Liners, and that's never going to change.
Line number one of dialogue that would not be written in the year 2022 is Lloyd saying, "Drama, is it right if I invite a couple of friends? What sorts of friends, Lloyd?"
Terrible. Yo, bro, but that
I
was
mean, it's
so
funny.
Amazing.
It's funny, but you, Doug, would not write that today, would you not?
No, I wouldn't write it today.
You just wouldn't?
I wouldn't. I don't think that Drama's character, in reality, I don't think Drama would speak like that. Not because
that was just strictly comedy-based.
Yeah, but
like what you were expecting Drama to say. He almost had to say.
Yeah, no, but see, I disagree because he said that, but it came from Drama to Lloyd with love. Like, so it wasn't like he was dogging out Lloyd.
And he did say it to Lloyd's face. He did say it to Lloyd's face.
So you can't cancel it if it comes with love. That was a funny beat.
I talked about in the meeting today, the boys.
No public displays of affection.
Any of you guys watch The Boys?
No, you love that show. Maybe you do like dudes in tight clothes. Doug loves
Boys. I saw
Boys
the first couple
Amazon.
Episodes.
The Boys is really good. The Boys is so anti-PC and is so...
Is
honestly,
it really?
Oh, my
oh,
God.
Oh, I didn't know
it is
anti-PC.
So much more aggressive than anything that was ever on Entourage. So when people say it, and people wrote it, someone tweeted the other day, oh, they could never do Entourage today. They could do it today, but people do evolve. And the reality is, I'm not sure Ari would run around an office and say the things that he said then, but...
Would
he
Drama
then,
say that today?
I think maybe. The Drama would grow up. Dylan probably would.
Listen, the point is that when Lloyd said that Drama or Turtle, like they had to say it. They had like it felt like you were waiting on that response.
Listen, man, I was at a friend's barbecue recently. And a gay man was hitting on me consistently.
Loved it, right? You're like,
by the way, I was like, yo, bro, are my shoulders as good as you say? Like, for real? Like, my hair does look good? I took it as a great compliment. But after a while, I was like, bro, it ain't gonna happen.
Right.
So you just
funny
say,
that you say that. So you know what I watched
last
night?
Say what the truth is.
Larry Sanders, which anyone who's never seen it, it's on HBO
Max.
Larry
Sanders. Such
I love Larry Sanders.
But Larry too. Sanders, Gary Shandling, was he has Duchovny on, who at the time Duchovny's probably like top five best looking men in the fucking country.
The fucking guy's had a great career, Duchovny. Great.
People I mean, magazine, on, right? Sexiest
he
not, Man Alive.
He's had, amazing, he's had an amazing career. But I was just talking about this episode. So Duchovny has like this weird crush on Larry Sanders, on Gary Shandling. And it is so funny. He's calling up, you know, he's married to Tia Leone at the time. I don't know if they're married anymore.
Yeah, it's the year he and I were both nominated for best actor in comedy series.
No, not from Larry Sanders, but they're from X-Files.
Sorry, I got confused.
Larry Sanders was way before us. I mean, I'm watching this. Bob Odenkirk, who was the agent on Larry Sanders, was the inspiration for Ari originally. But so, I mean, he's calling up and Duchovny's answering.
Is he playing Duchovny?
He's playing Duchovny. Right. And Larry's going, I think Duchovny's got this crush on me. And everyone's looking at him like he's crazy. But then he calls up Duchovny. He's like, oh, hey, Larry, hold on. Tia's here. And Larry's like, what? He's like, you want to meet in town tomorrow? I'll get a room at the Bel Air Hotel. And Larry's like, and everyone's telling Larry he's crazy. And then he goes over to Duchovny's, who's in a robe. And Duchovny opens his legs like Sharon Stone in, what's that movie?
Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. And it's geniusly funny. But Larry actually asks his gay assistant, who's kind of like a Lloyd
type.
Can
I ask you a question?
He goes, do I feel gay, you know, to you? And I don't know that you could have that conversation without getting in trouble at your office place anymore. I don't know. But
it's probably better to save that one for the bar.
Yeah, but did you ask Mike if you asked this guy who was hitting on you, do I feel gay to you? And did you go home that night and go, what is it about me that makes...
No, this dude was just excited about his sex. I mean, he was just on it. Right. You know what I mean? This dude was just, he was extra. And I just handled it calmly and just like, bro, please.
But you didn't think about taking a run at it. No.
I was going to say.
Not my type.
You really had to not handle my type. It, bro. You really had to handle it.
Skin is too perfect.
We've saved the for me, the best storyline for last. We come back from the break. We're going to talk about the first cut, the guys meeting up with Billy Walsh to see the rough cut of Medellin after the break.
I am happy to welcome an amazing new sponsor to the show. I'm talking about Sheath Underwear. Have you or your friends had trouble finding comfortable underwear? Underwear that is focused on your comfort with no chafing, no sticking, no drama, and designed so that everything fits exactly where it should, if you know what I mean. If yes, then you have to try Sheath Underwear. It all starts with Sheath's dual pouch system, a concept that was developed by the company's founder after enduring a summer in Iraq. Day after day of triple digit heat and unbearable chafing and discomfort. Founder and CEO Robert Patton felt there had to be a better way, and now there is. When I first saw it, I thought this is genius. My friends tell me all you do is put them on and gravity handles the rest. The dual pouch comfortably cradles you just like a hammock for your family jewels. And don't forget to check out our newest additions, the Bamboo V and the Mesh Boxer Brief. That means added comfort, added performance, added mobility. It's a whole new world of comfort and performance, and Sheath Underwear is all about supporting shows like ours and supporting free speech. So make sure to give Sheath Underwear a try. Go to sheathunderwear.com now and use the promo code VICTORY to receive 20% off today. That's sheathunderwear.com today and use the promo code VICTORY for 20% off.
All right, we're back. Victory the Podcast, Season 4, Episode 2, The First Cut is the Deepest. We've covered the public-private school storyline, which is still kind of mind-blowing to me, drama's house party for Vince, and now we get into The First Cut is the Deepest. The guys want to see the cut of Medellin because Ari's basically telling them, your career's on hold until people know what this movie's like, right? Is that kind of what it was? That's it in a nutshell. Right?
I mean, that really does happen, especially after some of the things Vince has been doing with his career.
A little rogue, going rogue all over the place.
Yeah, right? When they start hearing you're about to have a bomb come out, you know, you're not getting the offers that maybe you can. And now, look, someone may try to get you while you're undervalued, and somebody may offer you something low or a lowball offer. But I think that was a very realistic scene, especially at the time. I mean, again, things are so different now.
Yeah, but it still exists because I saw it with you. We saw it with you when you had that. Well, great that yours was like a birthday party slash, but when you had the first screening of Ramble On, which I think we can agree probably was too early to show, right? But you were just kind of excited. You wanted to almost get that monkey off your back. Did you want to get that first cut off your back? How do you feel? Were you obviously you were nervous because we're going to cut through the clip of you as you're listening to this right now. You're watching Doug pacing around back and forth at his house.
I've seen
looking
it.
A lot like Billy Walsh. But so what are your thoughts on a first cut?
Well, a couple of things. Different for I mean, even worse for a director, by the way, than the actor. The actor, who's a movie star who's got some piece of trash coming out, could have a problem. Interesting enough,
turn around and blame the director immediately.
But I swear to God, I remember this, and I can't tell you the details exactly, and I wasn't involved in it anyway, but there was the Bourne Identity had a word on it that it was a disaster.
Is that true?
Yeah, and Matt Damon had done, I think, Bagger Vance maybe, and a couple of things where people were like, Matt Damon's done. And then the movie came out, and it was like one of the best action movies ever made.
Right.
But there was rumors.
Was the word bad?
The
on
word the was like really? That, yeah. And I have no idea what's true or what's not true, but there was definitely rumors going around. But for a director, especially for me, look, I got it all on the line with Ramble On. There's no two ways about it. If this doesn't go, it's not that my career is over because I can't get a job. I'm done. It's right. over. I won't be able to get a job, but I won't try either. But but when I was showing that screening, and it's interesting to look at just by editing and shooting one new scene, how much different the show is now.
Well, that's
than it
why
was.
It's the first cut. What the saying goes, the best day is the first day of dailies, and the worst day is the first day of the rough cut.
Yeah.
You get dailies, everything looks awesome.
We can all
you
attest.
Get the first cut and you're like, I'm fucked.
Yeah. Now we right? can talk about I know and Entourage, I can give specific reasons
well,
why.
Well, tell us about let's talk about Entourage. What when you so you guys internally, you Lev, you guys come to a cut where you're all kind of working on it together. But when you first show
no, the you, first thing that happens is the editor puts a cut together. And what is really
an assembly.
An assembly, but what's really interesting about Entourage, the dialogue, I have a certain pace and a certain thing that I know in my head. It doesn't matter what you guys think or do. I know what I think it should sound like. I know the speed it should be at. And by the way, this episode was like lightning. Everybody was like, boom, boom,
really
boom,
was,
boom, boom.
Yeah.
It might have even been a little too fast, actually. It was really, really quick. But in the first episode, when you have four guys doing a scene together and you're not in a one-er where we actually are going to sort of manufacture performances, the editor built it at whatever pace he thought.
Picks takes that he likes probably. And like, it's the first cut is the editor's cut.
Yeah. And the truth is, even though I'd made two short films and two feature films, I don't even think I in my head understood how much I was going to be able to adjust it. When I saw that first cut
of Entourage,
right. The pilot, I honestly, I don't know if I physically cried, but everything in me said, my life is done. Right. This is over. I thought it was so absolutely awful. And by the way, wow. Other people might watch it and
no,
think it was fun.
That, and here's you know? The other thing for people listening, what they don't, people don't understand about rough cuts is that you're seeing it with there's no color timing, right? So it's usually a visually shitty experience, right? There's no sound mix. So it's the audio experience is shitty. So you got shitty audio, you got shitty, and it just gets better, better, better every time.
But
to the point where when you're done, you're like, whoa, okay, this is better. You got to get used to that.
But
right?
For me, that's all irrelevant. The only thing that mattered to me was how the dialogue sounded and how the guys were interacting. And to me, and again, somebody else might have thought it was fine, and he's a great editor. It felt so slow, and so all the beats that I saw in my head were not there, but I definitely didn't go, oh, I could fix this in 5 seconds, which I could. It was actually completely easy to just take the air out of it, which was always my goal, to make this thing go boom, 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 boom. And it did not take a lot of time, but I went
for
home that
you're
night.
Saying for you in yeah. there, once you saw the cut, you had your moment of like, all right, I'm going to throw up, my career's over.
Yeah.
And then once you get in there, you in whatever, 2 weeks or whatever, you're like, all right, I feel good enough yeah. now to show it.
Yeah.
And so take yourself back to like when you're showing it to whoever you would consider important that wasn't part of the core team. Obviously somebody at HBO or whatever it is.
I'll tell you the
are
first
you there
screening.
Because there's no yeah. links. In
oh, I'll
days.
Tell you the first screening, which it's funny because Mike Young's here and we're talking about Jeff Jacobs, who was my agent and the initial inspiration for Ari Gold. I went to his house. Now I've now
with a VHS tape, probably.
Probably. And I went there and I now have my feelings on what this show is, how good or how bad it is. And I felt pretty damn good about it. But we're not picked up yet.
Right.
So now my agent at CAA, the big guy, is watching it for the first time.
So that's the first one, even more so than HBO. Like, this is like, if you want, you need your agent at CAA to like this thing.
I don't know if I needed it, but it certainly would have made me feel a lot better. I don't even think we sent it to HBO yet, but I can tell you this. This is out of an Entourage scene.
I remember this.
I go to his house, and he had one of those houses where the kitchen is in the same room as the TV room, and his wife did the dishes while we watched this cut. And she did the dishes as fucking loudly as any human being ever. And all of my anxiety, which is real, of what Billy Walsh is going through, is like, I can't hear it. There's no way he can hear it. And honestly, I couldn't believe.
It's just distracting and loud and rude.
I just couldn't believe he wasn't saying anything to her. I couldn't believe she was doing it. The whole thing was horrible. The whole thing made me go.
The only thing you're hearing is dishes and clank, clank, clank. You're just hearing dishes clanking and clanking.
And I'm also going like my agent, who's a big agent. He represents people like Mike Young over here. Right. He obviously thinks he has no respect for me whatsoever, because there's 0% chance this would happen to a real client. So you walk out of that screening and
going like,
just
that was so disrespectful that he would even do that. He must hate me.
Well, it was crazy. He really didn't believe in it in the beginning. Remember, he had a bad attitude kind of three or four times that you had checked in with.
It's safer to have that kind of POV. So if it doesn't work out, people can go, well, yeah, I knew that as soon as I saw it, right? And then it's easier to turn around the other way.
Not tell you what he thought of it or not. It's irrelevant, but bringing it to the Ramble On screening, I knew there was a lot of great stuff in this show. But I knew after that screening that something was wrong. Now, it wasn't like what I'm talking about with the Entourage first cut, where there was a pace issue. We had story issues. People were confused and people were this. So you can have that. And you can make, amongst friends, we had Rob Weiss on last week, who was executive producer of Entourage. Amongst friends, he'll tell you how much great stuff was done in the editing room. David Finfer, who cut Kissing a Fool. He also cut The Fugitive and was nominated for an Academy Award. As far as I know, that movie didn't have the flashbacks in it at first. And when it played as a linear movie, it just wasn't this incredible movie. So you can do so much stuff.
Editing now.
Right.
I'm editing right
now.
It's
a bit mind-numbing.
It's mind-numbing. It's a heavy lift. It's a whole lot of brain work, but it's getting better and better. And it's the same thing you just got done saying, which is I saw my first rough cut, and I'm like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Right. I got a movie that's got fat all over the place. Now let's get into sucking the fat out of this and creating the comedy pacing that you're talking about that's so important in comedy.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to get through to my editor like, hey, man, there's this one scene where they're having this argument about John Mayer was in like one of their dreams and like pulled out a guitar in the dream and like got all the girls and whatever. But the ridiculousness of the whole thing was the pacing of it, was how amped up these guys would get over Mayer sneaking in their dream. And it wasn't like clicking with my editor, and he kept handing me like a slow paced.
Editors get the big bucks, right?
You could have the greatest editors ever. You got to get on the same page. And once I got on the same page, like my editor's cuts used to be so good, but the first one, and just to repeat, my editor was great, but it's the first time he's ever getting this footage with these actors, with this script.
And he doesn't know.
They also put everything in. They're not going to go, oh, that joke sucked, I'm going to cut it out. They're going to wait till you see it. So,
yes.
But you watched it with your agent. What's the first big screening with Entourage where you kind of had to sort of walk away and do what Billy Walsh is doing, kind of pacing around doing push-ups and smacking yourself in the face?
Notes from HBO is what you're saying.
I'm saying that what Doug is saying is like with Jacobs, he sat and popped the VHS into the thing and watched it with him, was distracted because he felt like people weren't focused on his work. What I'm saying is there comes a point where the HBO folks are going to go in there and watch it where they can speak freely without Doug in the room, and Doug is going to be in the parking lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even in the parking lot because that just gets sent to them.
Wait, did you leave Jeff Jacobs' house just pissed? Did he say anything like, this is going to be great, we're going to fix it?
He was just off-putting. Was it Doug just was a thinking negative dishes
all around?
I left pissed and depressed because you go, if this was that good, no one's going to treat you like this. You know what I mean? And I went, to be totally honest with you, if my wife was doing that to anyone, let alone a client, anyone, I would have divorced her the next day.
We're not divorced. So you just say like, yo, that's not, it's,
I
it's
just,
not above
it,
board.
It's right? Incomprehensible.
I'm sure that nobody meant anything by it, but
no, you can't do dishes when somebody's watching the most important thing of their life.
You know,
right?
Listen,
you
can't let
that
slide.
I mean, that would never happen.
I know I would never do it to anybody, no matter how bad their show was or their movie. Again, whether Jeff Jacobs liked it or not is at this point irrelevant, but I don't know what he thought.
It's super, who gives a shit now?
Yeah.
But I want to hear is the HBO.
The HBO thing is, You just send it to them and you wait.
Or you don't even send it to them. Somebody else sends it to them.
Yeah,
like,
but by the way, and I mean this sincerely, you don't exist. There's no like, oh, they call you 5 minutes after it ends.
So you don't even know when they're watching it. You know they have it and they could have watched it, could not have watched it. You just have no clue.
It was even worse than that.
Oh boy, that's brutal.
It was even worse than that because...
You must have been a real joy to be around them.
I think I was rolling around with them actually a lot.
We knew that there was another pilot from Richard Linklater. Okay, and we knew they were only picking up one.
Right, it was like so, a competing Hollywood now, pilot too, right?
No, I think it was Texas, but Linklater, however you pronounce it, he's one of my favorite filmmakers.
Great filmmaker.
So like, I'm sitting around, A, with my agent fucking doing dishes while we're showing the show,
right?
And it's going in, and I didn't have a single positive thing to say, except for I was really now convinced the show was good, except, by the way, which was a big debate. We knew the opening scene, which was we talked about this before. Right. It's the same dialogue that's at Fred Siegel in the opening pilot of Entourage, but it was in an empty bar. And we knew it was bad, and we didn't know if we should cut it out and start after that because we just didn't like it. But you don't know what they're saying over there. And thank God for Chris Albrecht because he watched it and was like, it's great. Get rid of the first scene. You're picked up.
Right.
You
know? Reshoot the first scene and you're picked up. But I guess my question is, somewhere along the line, whether it comes from Lev or whoever, you're like, all right, HBO has it.
Yeah.
And now you're like, okay, what does that mean? They're like, well, they're going to watch it and they're going to call you. How long did you wait?
Weeks.
Oh, man. Yeah. What weeks? What? 2 weeks?
Try 2 weeks.
2 weeks of nothing.
Yeah. Now
they have it and you haven't heard anything. Like, they're going to watch it this weekend. They're moving
it around. It doesn't matter what you hear. It's torture. By the way, the script was worse. You'd hand in a script, you wouldn't hear for a month and a half, 2 months.
We must have gone to O'Groats 18 times in that time.
And did they? So does it go from that 2 weeks of like nothing to like, hey, we love it? Was it that quick?
Once they picked up, it was.
Once they were in contact with you. So it went from you going like, fuck, man, maybe they're just going to go with Linklater to you're on.
Oh, it's not like just that. It's not just reshoot the opening. It's 8 episodes go. Everything in life changed.
But that happened in a day or
two and a half years to get to that point and then go. And ramble on, it's the same thing. You right now we're on the slow burn. Right. And as soon as someone, God willing, picks it up, everything changes and you move and you are working every single day. Whereas now, and one of the things that's, you know, I wrote in the second episode of Ramble On from Dylan, I won't talk about exactly what it is, but most of your days are spent doing nothing but waiting. And right. You should be, by the way, if you're a real writer, which I'm not, you should be writing else.
You
should be. And you should be, if you're an actor, you should be auditioning while you're waiting to see if your pilot gets picked up.
Right. But you shouldn't go a day without doing something.
No.
An acting class, do a monologue.
Yeah. You certainly shouldn't go like and be depressed and sit with your dog and go, my life's over. That's not a good thing.
Yeah. So I guess the question, so you do that. All right, so I should know this, and I apologize. I always forget this guy's name, but I love this quote. Who's the AFI guy that directed?
Stuart Rosenberg.
Stuart Rosenberg directed.
Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke says to Doug in AFI, you cannot travel with your work. In other words, once it goes, that's it.
That's it.
That's it. It goes, and you just got to let it go, and it's going to be what it's going to be, and people's minds are going to be made up or whatever it is. Did you have that moment with the Entourage pilot? Like, all right, guys, like, did you hear that noise in your head, that old email swoosh noise
obviously that swoosh didn't exist.
Of course, but I mean, you know, figuratively.
I mean, your life is in someone else's hands. Right. And again, it's different when you're a successful, hot director and it's like one of many things you're going to make. It feels like the same thing right now. This was it for me. If that show was passed on, I probably would have been out of this business. I was thinking about law school already.
Right.
So
you were talking about going back to, I remember it like it was yesterday, unless I'm mistaken again.
You might be talking about season 5
and
also.
Doug literally saying, I'm moving back to New York if this doesn't go. I'm going back to New York.
Yeah.
Like my brother had a hangar business or some weird business.
That's true.
Some company that you were going to like That's possibly go
true.
To work for.
It's all true.
And you're like, I'm done.
The phone just rings and that's it. Boom.
And by the way, Doug's... You are one of the most sensitive watchers of your own material because I've sat with you in screenings before and Doug is just
That's why I say,
sweating,
I think it's
biting.
Better. I
and
think
by the way, who's not like that? We all are.
I think it's better for Doug to not be there. I think it's better for everybody.
No, it's imperative that I am there. And the reason is because I pick up things and I understand it. And again, you weren't at the Ramble On screening. Connolly, most people were like, it's fucking great. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's going to be, but it's not yet. And
you saw the problems in the first cut.
I didn't as we talked about before, my friend Tyler Mitchell really identified what the problem was.
You knew something was off. Yeah. He pinpointed it.
He pinpointed it, and I knew how to fix it quickly. Thank God Ted had the money to fix it. But when you see, you know, the reaction today, and the reason we're talking about Ramble On too is because there are so many similarities to it, and because it is Connolly, Dylan, you know, Emmanuel will be in this, Jamie Lynn Siegler, right. You know, Jerry hopefully will be part of this, you know. But it's... The trajectory of all of this is so similar, and the opening scene, somehow I keep fucking up opening scenes. I don't
know.
Not
a great opener.
But the opening now, which you saw the show, actually.
I did.
You know, it really feels great right now. But let's get back to this episode so we can wrap it up.
I think you really answered the question because we've talked a lot about it, but there's the difference between sitting in and showing your agent, and there's a difference in like, all right, now HBO is going to watch this cut. And then they're going to basically decide the next 10 years of my life.
Yeah. I guess the point is to wrap this all up with Billy Walsh's character.
Who, by the way, absolutely murders it.
Genius.
Murders it.
But the reality of
Billy's... I want him for a movie. Reese.
All right.
You probably have to pay him.
All right. Hold on. The reality is Billy Walsh's character, who is this arrogant, cocky asshole. The truth is he's like everybody else. He's an insecure artist. And really... The reason Ramble On has taken such a slow roll for the last 3 months is because part of me has been a little like hesitant not to show the pilot because I love the pilot.
Now you do. But there was a moment where you were a little gun shy.
I know, but I'm saying I loved it for the last 12, 16 weeks.
Right, that was 8 months ago.
What I didn't love is what's going forward. Right. And part of me, which was the same on Entourage, and Larry David said it about Seinfeld. They picked up Seinfeld and they said, okay, go make 7 more, which was weirdly enough, we got the same order as Seinfeld, 7 episodes. I had no idea what it was. And on Ramble On, after the pilot was done, I know I'll figure it out, but I really couldn't explain what the show is going to be. And Entourage, I had no idea what episode 2 was when we got picked up. 0.
But wow. You know, it's interesting and we'll wrap this up, but you know, it's interesting because your style of writing that way, Doug, sort of influenced the direction of the show, right? And when we're talking about this, when we first started to go down the Medellin, you know, Vince as Pablo Escobar, the idea was that Vince was going to murder it. And then when people started making comments about Vince's makeup, Doug changed it to a bomb. Now, if you had a Bible and weren't riding with what you were hearing and seeing. So for Entourage, I think it kind of worked because you kind of went with the ebbs and flows.
And you know what?
It
worked for Ramble On too, because I saw how, you know, and I'm telling you, the show's going to be on the air, but it's not just guaranteed because you have Charlie Sheen. It's not just, send us anything. We'll put it on the air. You really have to deliver and you just can't quit. And I think that's what was so great about Reese's character. We didn't get to talk about the scene, which is one of my favorite scenes, which I love his girlfriend, Kat, who I wish I knew her name. And I remember, you know, without any weird shit, all the guys were absolutely in love with her.
And by the way, not just actors, like everybody was acting weird. Yeah. Not weird, just not themselves.
And by the way, insecure. Not creeping out.
No, everybody was just like, this one wasn't smoking. I'm like, hey, you want to smoke? No, I don't want to smoke in front of you. You want to smoke in front of a girl? What are you talking about? Like everybody was just a little bit like buttoned up and everybody was madly in love with this girl.
And that scene is so
Wait, is that his real girlfriend? Or
No.
Show?
But that's sure. Although his wife is named Kat, interestingly enough.
That's what
his new wife was a big director who did the J-Lo
movie.
He
was with Kat then, so you must have named it after Kat.
Probably.
And here's the other thing too. This girl, and of course we should know her name, and I meant to write it down. She was really good. Was she playing like dopey heroin?
You don't remember? No, I do remember because it's so clear that is like
some kind of opiate.
No, it's our homage to Quentin. It feels like a Pulp Fiction or a fucking Once Upon a Hollywood.
Like stoned, like maybe on drugs, maybe just
true romance. Open the door,
totally. Nancy,
for sure.
It's like and she's like shut the fuck up, and she's so real in her underwear,
and she has her phone in her underwear, and she's like, and she's like on with Walsh, like, yeah, Vince and E are going crazy over here. Yeah. Like she knows us.
But she's
like
so cool.
She did a really good job of like playing, not overplaying like the, what is it? Dopey? Not dopey.
On dope.
Like, doped
like she
up.
Felt like she was on
she
heroin.
She felt like she was like coming off heroin or like doing some weird shit.
And Reese's hair in the episode. Anyway, I really enjoy it.
Film canister around the neck.
Oh, that was a great moment.
I'm
kidding.
I'm not going to lie. I wonder about it.
Do you wonder?
No, I wonder now. I didn't think about it. I don't know. It was an interesting.
Oh my God.
That's a really, dude, you're marrying yourself to a choice. I mean, it's an 8-page scene where he's got a film canister around his neck. Once you shoot the first shot, you're stuck with that film canister.
That is a tribute to physical comedy.
There are very few people who could pull off both the Albert Einstein hair and wearing that canister on the neck, which, let's be honest, the real entire film on his fucking neck would be pretty goddamn heavy.
It's 9 reels or something. He couldn't even have it.
That he lifted up Connolly. He's strong.
He's strong.
He's got like a weird.
But I think it is, honestly, when you pull up and that's not me. Mark Mylod, one of the biggest directors.
All the film strips hanging in there.
The whole location of that thing. And Mylod's got a great movie that's getting amazing reviews coming out. The Menu, I think it's called.
Nobody in the history of cinema has ever had a cooler editing room than Billy Walsh and Mehdi.
Never. But just the whole thing. And him pulling that motorcycle out. But when you pull up and see him with that hair and that film around his neck, there's very few people that you would take that seriously. And I think it plays completely real.
He sells it top to bottom. And in true Victory fashion, we have no idea what happens in season 4, episode 3.
I'm excited to see it, though.
So we're looking forward to it. So there you go. Victory the podcast. It's come to be.